Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
It's your last week, Marcus.
It is. It's very sad.
How sad. It went very fast.
Yeah.
Maybe we can figure something out and get you both on the show or mix it up a bit.
Yeah. No,
see what
happens.
Double
science feature. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you both could come in and do one. Anyway, we'll figure that out later. Plastic in the Pacific Ocean. What's going on?
Well, not just the Pacific. Pretty much in every ocean, it seems, there is a an island of plastic, a big collection of plastic that sort of swirls about. And I didn't realize this, but that we dispose of about 8 million tons of plastic into the oceans every year. Into the ocean, yeah.
And that must mean there's a whole lot of tons that go elsewhere, not to the ocean.
Well, I guess some is disposed of correctly or recycled or put in landfills and whatever, but an awful lot ends up in the sea. And because of ocean currents, they sort of swirl about for many, many years, and eventually they end up in several sort of these big plastic islands that have formed in the middle of so there's one in the Pacific, in the North Pacific, South Pacific, Atlantic too, and there's one in the Indian Ocean as well. And these are called gyres. These are whirlpools of water that trap big collections of plastic. And they just sit there. And because plastic really doesn't decompose very easily, it sort of very slowly breaks down over many, many years. And then fish start eating it, and it goes into little particles, and you end up with fish filled with plastic, and that's not very nice. Mm. And so there's been this project. It's a Dutch-led initiative to start to clean up the oceans from plastic waste. So you can imagine going out there with a boat and just scooping it up, but that's going to take a very, very long time and a lot of manpower, and it's very difficult. So this guy, he's a Dutch inventor. He's only young. University dropout. Don't know what that means, but he's the CEO of a company called the Ocean Cleanup, and he's developed this technology where it's a passive plastic collection system. So he sends out these booms, effectively, that are sort of U-shaped, and they float on the oceans. There's no motors. They're just completely passive, no machines, nothing to break down. They just drift, yeah? And they basically, over time, start to scoop up the plastic. And so every so often, they just float around, and they float around in the same direction as the plastic is going because they follow the ocean currents the same way the plastic does. And as they drift around, they collect it up, and then every so often they send a boat out and empty out these floating booms, and off they go again. Yeah.
So they just continue on their own way, doing their own thing,
right.
Scooping up plastic.
Yeah, and because they're
good.
It is good, I think. They sort of go underneath the sea a little bit, so they collect a bit underneath the ocean, down to about 3 meters, and the plastic only drifts with the force of the ocean currents, and this is a bit bigger than most of the plastic, so it blows a little bit too, so it actually goes a little bit faster, so you can imagine it sort of picking it all up as it blows along.
Is there a risk for sea life?
That was a concern, but it only goes down a few meters, so fish can surely swim under it, and it's really just collecting up what's on the surface or just under the surface, so I don't think there's a big issue.
How does it know what to pick up?
It just picks up everything.
Everything.
So anything that's floating on the surface or just underneath, it will pick up.
Okay.
And you can imagine there's sort of a flotilla of these floating around the oceans and being tended to every few months, and people going out and collecting the plastic. But it's sort of a passive way.
Yeah.
They'll never break down. They just float along.
How long will this take to get rid of all of it?
Well, they've got a plan to build about 60 of these things. And they retrieve about 8,000 tons of plastic a year. So that's 8,000 tons of plastic being collected.
Going in and 8,000 being collected.
But 8 million going in. Yeah.
Right.
So there's still a big discrepancy.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. So there's a long way to go, and with the amount of plastic still going in, it's a bit of a waste of time?
It's a step in the right direction. Yeah.
But we actually need to do on land. Sort ourselves out.
Well, we probably shouldn't be dumping plastic in the oceans, yeah. But there's many, many sources, I guess.
Okay, we can keep following this though, right? We can sort of see how it's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And okay. I think 60 isn't many. You know, you could build 6,000 of these things and have them floating around, and maybe that would do it faster.
Something. Yeah. Okay, moving on to forgiveness.
So there was a recent article in Nature, one of the Nature journals called Human Behavior, And it said, when assessing the moral character of others, so when we sort of judge others, we cling to good impressions, but really quickly adjust our opinions about people who have behaved badly. So in other words, if someone only does good things, you have a good impression. Mm. Yeah. But if someone, maybe you have a bad boyfriend or girlfriend and they do something bad, but then every so often they do something that redeems them. Yeah. So they buy a bouquet or take you out to dinner or something like that, whatever it is. Yeah. You are much more ready to change your opinion about that person if they occasionally do something good, sort of, see
that
the,
sort of rates higher than the bad behavior.
Right. So it explains how humans forgive, right? And it also explains why humans sometimes stay in bad relationships, because the brain forms social impressions in a way that sort of that enable forgiveness. Because people sometimes behave badly by accident. We, as a sort of a species, we need to be able to update our impressions of people to forgive them and be able to move on. Yeah. And so what they did, so this is a series of experiments. They had 1,500 or so subjects. They were observing the choice of two strangers. And these people were just being observed. And they had a choice of moral dilemma. The moral dilemma was whether to inflict a painful electric shock on another person in exchange for money. So do you want money or do you just... And you're willing to inflict pain or do you just... You wouldn't do that because you're a good person, yeah?
Were they all good people?
No. So the good strangers mostly refused to shock, or the good in exclamation points, in quotation marks, mostly refused to shock another person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bad person tended to maximize their profit, so they tended to give shocks because they didn't really care and they just wanted the money.
They got a lot of money.
Right, they got a lot of money. But the point was, the people who were observing this were asked to give their impressions of these people. And so the results were, so people rapidly formed stable, positive impressions of the good stranger. So they always did good. They never harmed the person. That was
not a problem.
Not a problem. They were much less confident that the bad stranger was bad, was truly bad. And they could change their minds quickly if that person did something that was perceived as good. Yeah. So when the bad stranger occasionally made a generous choice, right, the people who were observing them's impressions immediately improved.
Mm.
All right.
So we quickly forgave them.
So they quickly, they quickly forgave them.
Did they actually use the term bad and good for these strangers? Because I feel like that might be probably a problematic term to have used.
I don't think they labeled them that. I think that was that was the perception of the people observing.
Because that sort of implies a certain
thing.
And again, like you're saying, the people that are observing, essentially this test is about, I guess, the nuance in terms of people's situations, perhaps, in terms of making these decisions as well.
So it gives you insight into, like I said, why people hold on to bad relationships, because that person may occasionally do something good and you're willing to forgive them everything at that point. It reveals a basic predisposition towards giving others the benefit of the doubt, even strangers, the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. Well, you know, I can see, he did a few bad things, but look, that person did something really nice there. So that's give them the benefit of the doubt. And it sort of reflects the fact that the human mind is built towards maintaining social relationships, because that's so important in building a society and sort of ensuring survival, I guess. And interesting that the last bit in the article, it said it may help shed light on psychiatric disorders involving social difficulties. So someone who suffers from borderline personality disorder and something like that, it may go some way to shedding light on those sort of disorders.
Hmm.
Well, like, from, is this what they got from the observers or from the...
Well, they're drawing, you know, how do they link this research to what are their conclusions? So these are some of their conclusions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
People. Complex. quickly, we're going to run through these Ig Nobel Prizes. Can you explain what Ig Nobel Prizes is opposed to a Nobel Prize?
Well, presumably you've all heard of the Nobel Prizes.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's a few, and they're awarded in this sort of October, November time, I think. But a month or so earlier, they have the Ig Nobel Prizes. So they honor achievements that make people laugh and then make people think.
Huh.
All right? They're supposed to celebrate the unusual and honor the imaginative and spur interest in science, medicine, technology, that sort of thing. Yeah. And so this year they had the 28th annual Ig Nobel Prize ceremony, which happened in the US in Harvard University. And it's organized by a magazine called the Annals of Improbable Research.
There's a magazine called it.
Yeah. Which sounds pretty cool, actually.
So what are some of the winners?
So who won? So there was 10 prizes, and I've got a few here. So there was the medicine prize went to a couple of guys who used roller coaster rides to try and hasten the passage of kidney stones. So this was a study. Yeah. And what they did is they took 3D printed kidney models for 20 rides on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad at Walt Disney World in Florida. Sitting in the back sections of the car yielded a 64% success rate for passing a stone, but only 17% when seated at the front. So in other words, if you have kidney stones, go on a roller coaster and sit at the back. That was it. What else? There was the Medical Education Prize. And it was awarded to a guy from Japan for the medical report, Colonoscopy in the Sitting Position, Lessons Learned from Self-Colonoscopy.
Self-colonoscopy.
Self-colonoscopy, which sounds like fun. Mm. So this guy, he won the Medical Education Prize for an experiment in which he reviewed the comfort and efficiency of self-colonoscopy in the sitting position by performing a colonoscopy on himself while seated.
And also probably in the comfort of his own home?
I hope so. Really hope so. Yeah. So he reported only mild discomfort, apparently.
There you go.
What else is there? There's one, the Reproductive Medicine Prize. So this is a very important study on... okay. This is the study to see whether postage stamps are useful for testing whether the male sexual organ is functioning properly.
Postage stamps.
How? So... apparently, this is a 4-decade-old technique for measuring nighttime erections. All right, they had male volunteers, because guys will do anything, to wrap a ring of postage stamps snugly around their penis, at bedtime, and check in the morning for tears in the perforations.
And that's a
and they reported that this was reported in 1980 in the Journal of Urology, and it was nearly 100% accurate.
Wow.
Apparently. So I guess to find if it was accurate, they needed someone there sitting there watching. They clarified that they manufactured their own stamps for the experiment because using official U.S. postage required permission from the Secret Service, apparently.
It's a very elaborate experiment. They got a prize, so. All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there, maybe.
Okay. Unless I think it's a complex stop. Let's not go any further.
Interesting.
Thank you very much for the past 3 weeks, Marcus. I do hope that we will see you again.
I hope so too. It's been fun.
And all the best.
Thank you.
That was Dear Science.